Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Break on through to the other side, man.
256, McMonagle here with you, filling in for Evan and Tiki here on this Friday afternoon. The last weekend of summer, it goes by. So before you know it, you look up, summer's over. It's crazy. Football season starts next week. Before you know it, it'll be Thanksgiving. You're carving up the turkey. It's true, though. He ain't wrong. Time is flying. And the older you get, it's true. All the cliches that they tell you. The days take longer and the years go by faster. As you get older, man, it is unbelievable. Summer's already over. It was just the 4th of July. It's crazy how fast it's going. Football is here. We started with football. And the New York Jets, and my optimism with the Jets. And we'll get to the Giants here in a little bit. And I'm not as optimistic as some. I know Moose was relatively optimistic today. And I don't think the Giants are going to be awful. And I know if you listen to me in the overnights, and thank you if you do, you know I'm not the biggest Daniel Jones supporter. Nor do I think Daniel Jones is the worst thing ever. I don't think he's the worst quarterback in the league. I do think he's talented enough, at least, to be a starter in this league. I just don't believe in him as being a quarterback who can lead my franchise to a Super Bowl. That's like I just don't think he's that level of quarterback. Is he good enough to take an average team or a talented team to the playoffs? Sure, and we've seen it before. He took a team to the playoffs. I didn't think they were overly that good, talent-wise. And he played a great game in Minnesota. Everyone seems to forget the Philadelphia game, but he did play a great game in Minnesota, and I do think he's a talented enough guy. I think his injuries scare the hell out of me, and that's why, you know, the conversation goes back for the Giants. For me, it's hard to have a conversation, and me and Sean got into it a little bit yesterday. It's hard for me to have a conversation about the Giants without focusing on Daniel Jones, because I believe as a franchise, you are nowhere until you have a quarterback, and I don't believe the Giants have one. So we could talk about how much they need help in the defensive backfield, and hopefully Adoree Jackson comes back. I don't think he's a excellent player, but he's an upgrade probably over what they have right now at the second cornerback position, and they're in desperate need of help. I do think the front seven, although lacking in depth, and I expected more moves on the waiver wire to help that depth, and it really didn't come. I do think the front seven is relatively probably their best position, you know, their best whether it's Dexter Lawrence, who's top of the league in the middle of the defense there. Now you've got, you know, Thibodeau and Burns on the outside, hopefully getting some pass rush. Okereke and McFadden probably as good of a linebacking duo they've had in years. It's been a barren wasteland at the linebacker position. So I think there's some talent there. And I do think, obviously, with Malik Nabers and, you know, wearing his new number one, which is still an issue. Unbelievable how many people still want to talk about that. I do think this wide receiving core is as talented as it's been for the Giants in a long time, and hopefully the offensive line is much improved. But ultimately, I still, even with given time, I think the offensive line has become a major excuse for Daniel Jones. And it's not like, you know, with the offensive line struggle, sure, okay, they haven't been so bad that you can't function. And they don't function. And the idea that no quarterback would function is BS. Would Patrick Mahomes be as good as Patrick Mahomes is with as terrible an offensive line as the Giants have provided? Maybe not. Maybe not a three-time Super Bowl winner, MVP, great, arguably greatest we've ever seen. No, maybe not. Would he be able to throw a couple touchdown passes? I bet your ass he could. Like, I think we've made a lot of excuses over the last 6 years for Daniel Jones and the way he's played. And we give sack numbers. Oh, you know they had 86 sacks last year? Yeah. Did you ever watch Daniel Jones and Tommy DeVito, for that matter, last year, run around like a chicken with his head cut off, not throwing the football and taking terrible sacks? I see it twice, three times a game. The quarterback can help the offensive line. The quarterback can help keep the sack numbers down. They don't have anybody who does that. Daniel Jones is terrible at it. So Daniel Jones is a quarterback who doesn't throw touchdown passes, who needs his legs, who just had a blown out knee, and every time he gets tackled, I'm worried about his neck. That's a problem for me. And we could talk about the defensive back problem. We could talk about the coaching problem. And we will. I was fascinated to hear Connor Hughes talk about the Giants head coach, Brian Daboll, feels like he's coaching for his job. And we'll get into that right here on The Fan, 888-808-1019. We can have all those discussions, fine. And maybe this year will be a little bit better than I even hope. And maybe they'll be playing games at the end of the year trying to be a playoff team. I hope that's the case. And I heard a caller on before talking about, well, if you switch Brock Purdy and Daniel Jones, could Daniel Jones win with the roster of the 49ers? Sure he could. Good luck building it. You want to start with Daniel Jones making $40 million a year and then try and figure out how to build the 49ers roster? Good luck. That seems a whole lot more plausible than drafting a young stud quarterback who changes your team around, right? Okay. Sure, could Daniel Jones win with the best roster in football? Win what? I'm not sure, but could he be, you know, could he lead the 49ers to a division title in a playoff? Sure, maybe. Maybe. That's not the position the Giants are in. And if you think that's a, you know, an easy way to go about building things, good luck. Good luck. But we'll get to the Giants. We're still talking Jets right here. 888-808-1019. But we'll talk Giants. Anything you want to call in right now, football-wise, until we switch to the baseball a little bit later, which we will get to the Yankees and Mets. Mets with a great rebound victory, but still, to me, a very difficult uphill battle. And yes, the closer came in through fastballs and found restored belief in his 100-mile-an-hour fastball, but still concerned about where they are, who they're up against, and who they're trying to overtake. But let's get back to the calls at 888-808-1019. Linda in Long Beach. What's up, Linda?
Yeah, good afternoon. It's a pleasure listening to you. Thank you very much for your insight.
Thank you very much for calling, Linda.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like I told the young man who answered the phone, I've been a football fan for a long time and a very, very disgruntled Jet fan for just as long.
Sure.
I was around when Joe Namath won that game. And yeah.
You sound young and hard, Linda.
Why, thank you so much. Thank you. I appreciate that. But, you know, I do have a feeling that our coach right now is a defensive coordinator.
Okay.
Because we have no quarterback. I get that. But yet, you know, instead of being able to give confidence to his young quarterback and know that he knows how to use the clock and know that he knows what to do, I have no belief at all that he does either one. So when you say, okay, he has no quarterbacks, well, okay then. But you know what? If he gave the team confidence on the fact that he knew, I think he became a fan. When he's watching the quarterback actually throw the ball right and make plays and their offense is gelling, I don't think that he's really paying attention to the clock. And I think that cost the team and maybe cost the quarterback a little bit of confidence.
Yeah.
Now, I never liked Zach Wilson. I thought that he was not a professional quarterback. I get that. But his quarterback coach was killed. They didn't get anybody else. And their coach is a defensive coordinator. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Let's take it at the first of, no doubt, the ability to... Now, I don't know what Zach Wilson could have been given every great circumstance. You know, quarterback coach, the great roster.
And we never will.
And we never will. But there's no doubt, Sala and thank you so much for the call, Linda. Sala and... Joe Douglas obviously take their blame for being unable to develop Zach Wilson. Whether it's you want to just go as far back as drafting the wrong player, sure, of course. You can't miss on the second overall pick at the quarterback position. It kills you. So whether they drafted the wrong guy, clearly in my estimation they did. I think everybody's estimation. But also, did they do a great job of helping to develop him? No. Did they give him a defensive coach? Yes. Could they have given him better, you know, offensive coaching? Sure, absolutely. That is a failing of theirs, no doubt. But specifically with a young first-time head coach that you hired as coming from a defensive coordinator, as you say, to give him a young quarterback and expect him to be able to just suddenly, you know, transform Zach Wilson into a quarterback or breed confidence into a young man who had trouble breeding it into his own teammates. Like, that's the thing. Now, I think one of the bigger failings of Robert Saleh was that he allowed the team to celebrate the Mike White ascension as much as they did. I think that ultimately when you knew there was a chance, depending on how your owner felt about it, depending on how your GM felt about justifying a second overall pick, that there's a legitimate chance of going back to said quarterback and to allow this team to literally praise him at the level and throw the party they threw that Mike White was taken over. Mike effing White was taken over. Probably a failing and hurt the quarterback, hurt him in the standing in the locker room, hurt everything about going back to Zach Wilson. Totally agree. And that's why at the beginning of last year, I was not screaming about the offensive line like most people were. I was not saying, oh my God, how do you not get a great offensive line to help protect this 40-year-old quarterback? That was not my screaming. My screaming was, Zach Wilson can't be here. There was this BS timeline that we were told. Remember, and one of the other dumber things Rodgers has ever said, along with all the other stuff he said, was, well, I'll be here for 2, 3, 4 years, and then we go right into the Zach Wilson era. Like, that was never going to happen. You have to make decisions on his fourth year and his fifth year options. Like, you can't. The idea they were ever going to go Rodgers back to Wilson was the dumbest thing. The minute they traded for Rodgers, they should have been looking for the backup quarterback that now they have in Tyrod Taylor. That's what they should have been doing. They should have, while Zach Wilson might have still had some more value, traded him then and brought in a veteran backup quarterback for Aaron Rodgers. That was the biggest, without question, failing of this organization. Now, whether Aaron Rodgers had something to do with that and he wanted to try and fix his image that he's unwilling to help the Jordan Loves of the world and wanted to repair that sort of image of him and deal with the young players and go out to Ranger games and go to bat for the young backup quarterback, young second draft quarterback that he believed in, had a relationship with. And if Rodgers had a lot to do with that, like everybody suspects and we all feel, that's on Rodgers as well. Rodgers should be all about who he plays with, not who replaces him. I have no problem with him saying, go out and get me this guy, go out and get me this weapon. I've played with this guy. He can help the room. He can help my, you know, go get Randall Cobb to be a second coach on the field and blah, blah, blah. I had no problem with any of that. Go get Lazard, even though he was dropping passes left and right and had a terrible year last year. And apparently at camp looks much better. And as a third wide receiver option, not that bad to go along with Gibson. And, you know. But I have no problem with him deciding who he plays with. He should have no say and who plays instead of him. And if he did, and if the Jets allowed that, that's a failing of theirs. I'll be willing to own that and admit to that. But I still can't tell you I know what Saleh can be when he had to go last year. This team was built on the belief. If you watched Hard Knocks, and you saw it in the defensive room, they're going over practice highlights from that day and showing Aaron Rodgers' throws and just oohing and aahing and saying, this is now our quarterback, fellas. If we could just do our job, this is the quarterback we have. The whole thing was built on Aaron Rodgers being Aaron Rodgers. Right? Right or wrong? I think it's right, but right or wrong, that's what it's built on. And when he goes down in a heap and you know the injury is significant, there's no coming back from that. I don't think there's a head coach in the league who could come back from that. Do it slightly better? Sure, okay. Win a game or two more, maybe. Not really win, not turn that thing around. Not with Zach Wilson. And you talk about clock management and different things. Sure, I mean, I'm not saying he's a great head coach and he's had issues with those things, but I need to see a legitimate team with a legitimate quarterback before I make that decision. I'm in the camp of he's got a lot to prove. And I don't know if he's a good head coach. I'm not saying he is. But I got to see a hell of a lot. I got to see him with an opportunity before I can declare that he won't be a good head coach. And he's got this year. That's it. They got to win. Everybody knows that. Like we Aaron Rodgers saved their jobs. And absolutely, if this fails, if this offense isn't good, if this team isn't good, everybody's gone. Brendan in White Plains. What's up, Brendan?
What's up, man?
What's up?
Yeah, I wanted to kind of defend Saleh a little bit, and I agree with your take. It's not so much you, but a lot of the stuff I hear on the airwaves here. The Jets hired the guy from San Francisco. Where's the rah-rah? Where's the fire? And it's like, he's had nothing from a quarterback perspective, but you know, Morgan Moses came on the radio with Evan and Tiki a couple weeks ago, and like the words he used when he's like, it starts with the coach, man. These guys will die on the field for him. And then you hear Derek Carr talking about when he was thinking about joining the Jets. He's like, it started with the coach, the respect for Saleh.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm kind of sick of, like, the rhetoric coming out of the media that oh, he's not a leader. Like, the defense was on the field for like 70% of the plays last year, and they didn't quit. Like, these guys, he is a leader of men. He might be showing it differently than when he was a coordinator, but the players, they'll die on the shield for this guy, man. Yeah. And so, like, I think it's the kind of a lazy take that people are like, why isn't he yelling and all this? It's like, you don't know what's going on inside the locker room.
No.
But when you hear someone like Morgan Moses come on the radio and say, these guys will die on the field for him. Like, that's a serious statement. So, yeah. You know, I just think, and that combined with the fact that if a hotshot coordinator, offensive coordinator got hired, and yes, look, he hasn't won a ton, right? You are what your record says you are. But all of a sudden takes a team that was dreadful, and they have a top five offense with a terrible defense, that's what he does, right? He's a defensive guy. Guess what? The Jets are projected to have the best defense in the league, and they've had a tremendous defense the past couple of years.
Right.
That is his thing, right?
Yeah.
So he did come in as a defensive coach and make a great, you know, put together a great defense.
I hear your point. I hear your point.
I just kind of want to defend that.
Well, I hear you. And I hear your point that you just made, the last point you just made there about if a offensive guru kind of coordinator gets hired as head coach, he won't be held accountable for the defense. Like, if the defense is miserable but the offense is good, that he'll be praised as, hey, he did his job. Yeah, on some level, I think that's probably more fair because it's an offensive league, right? And we'll all believe in the ability. You know, you need to see the offense even more than you need to see the defense in this league, kind of. So on some level, he'll probably get more than Robert Saleh did because bad offense is a miserable watch and everybody hates it. But I still think the coach is ultimately responsible for wins and losses. So I understand what you're saying.
But I think the fact
Robert Saleh still needs
wins,
to win more.
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
The fact that he got seven wins out of Zach Wilson and Mike White or whoever the heck was it, Boyle,
yeah.
Like,
no,
I mean,
agree.
A lot of slack around here is all I'm saying, and I think the guy has actually done a pretty damn good job, and we'll see. Look, this year is going to make or break either way, but the fact that the main thing is, like, I hate the whole thing about this isn't the guy they hired. It's and Morass was saying, other guys were saying that the other day. It's like,
no, I think
listen to the players. Like, they will die on the field for this guy. So that's my take. Anyway, thanks, Chris.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah, I disagreed with some of the stuff I heard that day. I was driving home from Florida listening to the show. I disagree with some of the takes they had on Saleh, and I agree. I think Saleh gets a lot of flack. Now, you said he's done a pretty good job. I don't know if you can say he's done a pretty good job. Like, It's for me, it's as much an incomplete as you can have. Like, he's done a poor job. I think that's the only way to say it. Like, I don't think he's done a very good job. I think that's unfair. Yeah, the defense has gotten better, right? But the defense is really talented too. It's not like we talk about Wink Martindale and what he did with the Giants defense a couple years ago. Like, he took a defense that we didn't think really had a lot of talent and had them making big plays down the stretch of games to help an undermanned and less talented Giants team pull up upset victories in the fourth quarter against the Baltimore Ravens and the Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers. Like, that was a great scheme, you know, coaching job. Now, Robert Saleh's done a good job too. I'm not saying he hasn't, but he does have legitimate talent on the defense. He's got a shutdown corner. He's got the best cornerback duo in the league, arguably. He's got Quinnen Williams, one of the better, you know, tackles in the league. He's got some real talent there. You know, his brother Quincy Williams has played incredibly well. So, like, it's not like he's pulled off a miracle with the defense. He's got a very good defense. He's got them playing pretty damn good. I can't tell you he's done a great job or good job or that I feel confident necessarily. What I'm saying is you can't look at this team like so many have and said, sure, they're talented. Sure, they're this, sure, they're that, but ultimately the head coach is something they can't overcome. I think that's ridiculous. I don't think we're anywhere near there. And the idea, that we're hung up on, you know, whether or not he's a rah-rah guy, whether or not his all gas, no brakes, or all the other cliches he came up with during Hard Knocks last year is some sort of, you know, masking and done by guys who can't do better. They come up with these cliches. Like, I don't know. That might end up being what happens. I don't think you can call anybody wrong, no matter what you think about Robert Saleh. It's been such a complete incomplete. Mike in New Jersey, what's up, Mike?
Hey, what's up, Chris?
What's up?
I just wanted to touch a little bit on that Zach Wilson comment thing. It sucks that Rodgers got hurt you know, at the beginning of that game. But I really believe that if he would have sat behind Rodgers for an entire year with Rodgers playing and him learning that, not saying that he would have been such a great quarterback afterwards, but I think that would have helped him be a better quarterback. And we probably would have been able to transition from Rodgers to Wilson. You know what I'm saying? He just got a raw deal, basically. Everything that this kid needed kept falling apart. I mean, Jesus, how many times does somebody, you know, somebody die that you're counting on helping you do something?
No,
you know
I understand. What I'm saying? No, I understand. But again, it's not so much when I said that the idea of him for, you know, being the quarterback after Aaron Rodgers, it wasn't so much that. I mean, part of it is I don't think he's any good, but that's not the main reason. The timing doesn't work. Like, what were you going to do? You have to make are you going to pick up a fifth-year option waiting for him to be your quarterback in another 3 years? Do you not pick it up and pay him what? Like, what value do you give a backup quarterback? Wait, like, what contract is he going to sign? Like, it doesn't, like, the whole situation, the timing of it, a third-year quarterback sitting behind a guy who says he's going to play 2-3 years, the timing of it never made sense. It wasn't so much like, oh, he was never going to be good. They were foolish. I agree with that sentiment too, but the whole thing just never made sense. You don't draft a quarterback, fail after 2 years, bring in a Hall of Famer, keep him there now, let him sit through his fourth and fifth years, pick up his option, don't pick up his option, give him a contract as the backup quarterback, then move on. Like, it's just, it's too much craziness. It doesn't work that way. The whole scheme was stupid. They should have just traded him. He failed after 2 years. Move on. And yes, would he have benefited from it? Yes, he definitely would have benefited from it. And everybody talked at the beginning of last year, and this is unfortunately what I think of Zach Wilson. Everybody talked at the beginning of last year, oh, Zach Wilson's completely different. He's completely different. You should see him now. The way he carries himself. Yeah. You know why? Because he knew he wouldn't have to play. Or at least thought. Huh. As it turned out, he did. But he thought he wasn't going to have to play. He went in there with no pressure on him. He was going to relax for a year. He went in there with no issue, no pressure, and went in. He was going to learn at the hands of Aaron Rodgers. It was going to be a, you know, class in session type of year for him. And that's why he was able to, you know, play better through training. The minute the pressure was on and that was taken away from him, that's partially why he struggled, no doubt. He had a mindset, and it was ripped away from four plays in, and suddenly he's the starting quarterback for the Jets again after never, not even for, it's not even like he had it for a month. Class was never in session. So I get that. And we'll see, you know, he's the third stringer in Denver right now. Playing behind a rookie quarterback. Aaron Rodgers makes a world of difference with this Jet team. That's the bottom.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Mike in Massapequa, what's up, Mike?
Hey, how you doing? I was just listening to you talk before about Daniel Jones in the offensive line.
Yes.
And I'm not here to defend Daniel Jones because obviously he hasn't been great. He does have potential in his first year. He was very accurate throwing the ball down the field. But this offensive line, you said before, an offensive line, a quarterback can help an offensive line. And yeah. I believe that's true. I do believe that's true. But that offensive line was like a jailbreak. It was a defensive highlight reel every week. I've never seen defensive ends come completely untouched like I saw last year. I mean, this kid wasn't even getting his foot planted, and there was already somebody hitting.
Yeah,
their offensive line, I think people get used to watching it be so bad. A handful of years ago, for the number of years, Saquon Barkley would get the ball handed to him, mm-hmm. and there'd be a D tackle on his ass.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I know everybody wants to say there's no way Daniel Jones is going to be good. I mean, I ain't saying he's Joe Montana, but, like, when the owner said this kid really hasn't had a fair shot,
yeah,
he really hasn't. And I mean, we're going to find out this year.
Oh,
we're going to find out.
Is this going to be finally it? Are we going to be satisfied? Or do we need next year?
Because if he doesn't do it this year,
He has to go.
We've said that before.
I mean, he's had 6 years.
We've said it before. And last year, I will tell you this, right? Yes. Without question, I will give this. There was no quarterback in the league last year that would have won the opening game against the Cowboys. They got absolutely blitzed. I come from the block field goal. He went down the field a little bit on the first drive. They get the block field goal, and Thomas gets hurt. And that was a jailbreak game. Totally agree. The offensive line gave them no chance to win. They lost 40-0. Daniel Jones could have been better, but had no chance, really. That's fair. I challenge you to watch the game against the Seahawks and tell me Daniel Jones didn't have a chance and that Daniel Jones didn't play atrociously. And when I tell you that he can help the offensive line, there's a play in that game where a linebacker is standing over the edge on the left side, covered by no one. Standing there wide open, untouched, and unblocked in the scheme. That's on the quarterback to recognize. This is year five at the time for Daniel Jones. He's got a linebacker uncovered off his blind side, and he just snaps the ball, takes five steps, turns his back to him, and allows himself to be planted into the ground.
But you're discussing one play.
But it happens over and over again.
But when you're getting destroyed, you don't think he's a pick six guy?
He's got to be better than allowing one hit to impact the next play. I'm sorry.
More importantly than anything, they did address the offensive line, so the excuses are over.
Well, we've heard this before. They drafted Andrew Thomas. That was going to fix the impact line. They drafted Evan Neal. That was going to impact the offensive line. We had all this before. We've heard this before. This is the last year of Daniel Jones. And when I say something to you, this is, and you mentioned what the owner had to say about Daniel Jones. When they hired Dable and Shane at that press conference, the owner said, "We've done everything in our power to ruin this kid." That's what he said. That was the quote. "We've done everything in our power to ruin Daniel Jones. It's been unfair. We've done everything to ruin him." And he was 100% correct. They constantly gave him terrible head coaches. They changed his offensive game plan. He had no real wide receivers, and the offensive line sucked. I think that's fair, right? We've been talking about the development of Zach Wilson. The New York Giants did nothing to help Daniel Jones. But here's my problem. All right? Here's my problem. When you say, "We have done everything to ruin this kid," you know what my take from that is? Don't ruin the next one. Learn from what you just did and don't ruin the next one. Ruined is ruined. You don't say, "We did everything to ruin this kid, so I owe it to him to try and unruin him." There is no unruining. It's ruined. So when you did the poor job to help Daniel Jones for the first 3 years of his year, of his contract, of his career, that's on you. But allowing the fourth, fifth, and sixth, like, that's on you too. Now, I understand he played well that next year. He deserved the contract because they won and they had no other option. But let's not make it sound, we look back on that year, Daniel Jones didn't turn the ball over. That's it. Do you know why? One, he fixed his fumbling issues, which, bravo, he needed to, and he did. That's on him. Congratulations. It's on Brian Dable and coaching him up, no doubt. But if you watch those games and how they won, one, they won it by an overachieving defense, making plays at the end of games and getting turnovers, and two, running with Saquon Barkley, and three, taking no freaking chances, not throwing the ball down the field. And if you think that this Giant team can continue to win or have another season like it and make another playoff game by telling Daniel Jones to look for Malik Nabers and if he's not there, run the football, I've got something to tell you. It's not going to work. And you've seen it this training camp. What have they done? They have thrown the ball down the football. They have tried to attack. They have let Daniel Jones throw the football, and in the first preseason game, he threw it right into the other team's hands. The turnovers were limited because they didn't trust him. Now they have no choice but to trust him. They've got a wide receiving core. They've got an offensive line, or at least what they hope is a revamped offensive line. I have to see it before I believe it with the disaster it's been for a decade now. So I'm with a lot of you. They've done him no favors. They've put him in a poor position. But when you do that for the first 3 years and now you're forced to pay him and I still don't know about him year six, that's a disastrous situation to have as a quarterback situation. It's a disaster. A already paid quarterback on year six where now I'm still saying, well, let's see. What kind of horse crap is that? What kind of situation have you put yourself in? You're in year six of an already paid quarterback saying, well, let's see. When you said you ruined him, you should have moved on and said to yourself, how do we not ruin the next one? Instead of trying to make up for what you've already done. And that's why the Giants are still in a position that they're in. Where, all right, the roster's built up a little bit. We'll see about the defensive backfield if they add Adoree Jackson. Maybe it can be better. We'll see about the new defensive coordinator. We'll see about the pass rush they've tried to, you know, they traded for and hopefully drafted with Thibodeau. We'll see if all this comes together. Maybe they're better than I'm hoping. I'm open to it, and I'm hoping for it. And I don't think Daniel Jones is terrible. I just don't think an already paid six-year quarterback who now is coming off multiple seasons of ending season injuries, of a blown-out knee and neck injuries, that a neck injury that's reared its head for a second time already. And a quarterback who relies on his legs as much as Daniel Jones does. Now I've got a quarterback who I need to be able to run with a blown out knee and a neck injury, and every time he gets tackled, I'm worried about him. A quarterback who doesn't throw touchdown passes, who is only good the 1 year he didn't take chances, and now I'm taking chances upon him. And I've already paid him, and I don't know about him year six. And his backup sells... You know, his backup is a $5 million waste who hasn't been good in the NFL. And the third backup sells pasta sauce. Like, the quarterback room for the Giants is a disaster. It might turn out to be better than I think, but the quarterback room for the Giants is a disaster. And it's hard for me to have a long-standing, serious conversation about the Giants without going there because that's the NFL. And I know we'd like to, and I know me and Sean talked about it. Sean would like to have another conversation besides the quarterback. I get it. And there are conversations to be had. But ultimately, if we're previewing the season on this Labor Day Friday, it's hard for me to get away from that situation. From two backups I don't trust, a quarterback with a blown out knee and a neck injury, trying to figure it out after I've already paid him on year six. Not ideal. To quote the great Joe Girardi, not with
you. You're as cold as ice.
I am not.
You're willing to sacrifice our love.
I'm willing to sacrifice. I was going to say Daniel Jones, but I'm not. I'm not cold as ice. I just don't have faith in the guy. That's all. I do think some of, like, you know, I've gone over it before. The idea that he's like the 30th best quarterback. I mean, they have rookies who haven't played a snap ranked higher than him in some, like, dopey list. Like, that's ridiculous. I do think Daniel Jones has ability. I do think he can be a starter in this league. I just think the situation that the Giants find themselves in a rebuild, paying him and still unsure of him, it just makes no sense. Yes?
Did it make sense to, if you're in a rebuild, does it make sense for Brian Burns to be a Giant then?
Well, sure. Yeah, you need pass rushers.
You're in a rebuild and you have how much of your cap towards Brian Burns?
Well, you need playmakers. I mean, everyone needs playmakers. What are you supposed to do? How do you rebuild?
I'm just saying, if you know you don't have a quarterback and if you know your team is in a rebuild,
you
took a whole bunch of your cap and you put it towards a guy who's an incredible pass rusher, obviously.
Yeah.
But what's the ceiling of the Giants this year? 5 wins? 6 wins?
No, the ceiling's higher than 5 or 6 wins. That's hopefully that's close to the floor. I think they're better than that. I'm looking at, that's not the ceiling. That's probably what I think they'll be. If everything breaks right, they could win 9 games. If everything breaks right, the ceiling, which is the highest they could possibly go, is 8-9. I think there's a chance they could be relevant and right around the playoffs at the end of the year. I don't think they're going to do that. I think they are going to finish somewhere around 6 or 7 games, would be my thought. But that's not their ceiling. Their ceiling is 9 wins, let's say. I don't think they'll get there, but that's as best they could do. I do think, like, they do have a young, talented wide receiving core. I do believe in, obviously, I think Neighbors is going to be a stud player. I think Hyatt is someone who could at least take the top off of defense and set things up for Neighbors and Wendell Robinson, who I believe is a shifty, you know, decent slot wide receiver, who I think is the ability to make some plays if given the opportunity to stay healthy and the Giants can actually have a passing attack. I think it's without question the most talented wide receiving group he's had. I do think the offensive line with Andrew Thomas and, you know, Runyon and the young center, who I think has a chance to be a good player in this league, and Illuminor, like, they have some options. The team offensively should be much better. And I want to get to the calls, but we're going to get to, and I hear what you're saying, that if it's rebuild, just strip the whole thing down. Pass rushers are different. You need pass rushers in this league. You need playmakers. You need, like, I understand what you're saying about giving that kind of money. I don't want them to tank to start the year. I want to,
sure.
Like, they have a quarterback making $40 million. Go out there and try and win. But I just...
Well, they kind of box themselves into a corner with that, obviously.
Right, yeah. So. Like, it's when I say rebuild, I meant that's what, like, the process was when they first took over. They won. They were so successful in year one, they were forced to pay Daniel Jones, which makes it harder to do the rebuild. I just think, you know, I know they tried to move up, clearly. And that's the other thing. I don't know how much faith the organization has in him. And maybe that's the best thing. Maybe they put a chip on Daniel Jones' shoulder, and he's going to play the best of his career.
You also wonder if Joe Shane thought that the first two Dable years would be reversed, right? That they would get to that first year.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt.
But then that second year, they would make that big jump.
I think they were anticipating not having to pay Daniel Jones. Like, I think they thought they would start to build a roster, get a quarterback in here some way, not have to pay Daniel Jones, probably be bad enough where they'll draft a quarterback and begin with Brian Dable and a young quarterback he believes in, which to me, still, to this moment, and we'll get to the idea that the coach is coaching for his job. If Brian Dable, whether it's this year or whenever, if Brian Dable exits stage left without ever having an opportunity to coach up a young quarterback he believes in, it will be an immense waste to me, because that's why he was brought here. He was brought here because he developed Josh Allen. That's why he got the job. We can say, you know, he's a great play caller, and some of his former players have, right? And I'm excited about him taking over the play calling this year. I think it's exactly what he should do. And we'll get to all this at 888-808-1019 when I talk more about Brian Dable. But, like, we've heard from Diggs that he was a great play caller. That's fine. And all the different things he did with Buffalo, that's fine. He made a name for himself and got hired, and so did Joe Shane, because they drafted and developed Josh Allen. The project of that draft class became, right there with Lamar Jackson, the best of the draft class. He actually took a step down the year Brian Dable left. Like, developing Josh Allen is why he got hired. And to force Daniel Jones upon him seems unfair. And if he does leave, whether it be this year, next, whenever, and he never gets the opportunity to do that for the New York Giants, it will be an immense waste. Let's get to the phone calls, though, at 888-808-1019. Neil in Smithtown. What's up, Neil?
Hey, Chris. How are you?
Good. How are you, buddy?
Good, thanks. Happy holiday weekend, you and your family.
Oh, thank you. Same to you and yours.
Thanks very much. Yeah, I wanted to get to the Giants, but first I just wanted to talk a little bit about Lindor.
Sure.
Because when they first signed him to that big contract, I wasn't really sold. And, of course, he never really lived up to what he did when he was with Cleveland. But
right.
It seems ever since he got that leadoff spot,
yep.
It seems like that's when he evolved into actually the leader of the team.
Yeah, well.
And he's won me over.
Yeah, well, I don't know how he couldn't have. And I think the fact that you didn't. Now, did he play quite as well as he did at Cleveland sometimes? No. He was his best version prior to this version of him since, you're right, the leadoff. And when you say leader, he became the MVP-type caliber player when he went to leadoff. But the actual leader of the team, when he stepped up and called the meeting. Now, I think sometimes meetings can be overblown, and they didn't turn it around right away after the meeting. But he specifically called the meeting, and he specifically spoke after the meeting and talking about the way the guys prepared and worked. Like, he called out the team. So that meeting was important for him to take leadership of this team, and then clearly the leadoff spot got him hot, and he's never cooled off. And
yeah,
Now,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And I'm surprised a lot of Met fans needed this because he's been an excellent player for them. Now, again, did he have better moments and better seasons with Cleveland? Okay, yes. Is it an enormous contract? Yes. Is he overpaid? Of course. You want to go through the list of players who are overpaid? I mean, like, does he deserve as much money up until this moment? Maybe not, but still, a damn good, excellent Gold Glove caliber defensive shortstop who's put up as good of power numbers at the position as there is in the league. I understand what you're saying. This has been another jump where he's even better than he's been, but I still think, for the most part, his Met career has been pretty damn good, and I'm surprised you needed this to really feel at least, you know, somewhat of a pleasant emotion towards him, because he's been pretty good.
Well, he seems to have always gotten off to a slow start, like he did this year, and he does play every day, so that you got to give him a lot of credit for that.
Yep.
Same with Alonzo, you know. And
yes, Alonzo plays every day.
But honestly, you know, he might have had better numbers in the past years, but they were usually just, you know, in garbage time, you know, when they didn't maybe mean anything or in games that it wasn't.
I guess that was the big knock, especially last year when they went through that June swoon. Like, following the 100-win season, 101-win season, you had high expectations, and the June swoon hit, and they were floundering in Pittsburgh and all these different places, really struggling, and the season was falling apart. Lindor was in a slump. And so he didn't help this team battle back the way he did this year. So I get that, and that happens from time to time. But overall, he's been pretty damn good. And right now, yeah, he's, to quote, you know, Tommy Lugauer, he's in the MVP conversation. He's not going to win. Otani's, you know, going to be a 50-50 guy. But, yes, he's in the MVP conversation. He's had an incredible year. He's clearly the leader of the team, and he has taken an immense step into becoming an all-time great Met. Like, as crazy as that sounds, you don't have that many. And if he can actually win around here, which I think they're hopefully on the verge of doing that over the next couple of years, you know, Lindor will go down as the first real move of this ownership group and someone who has led the team since he's been here.
Absolutely. If I could, about the Giants.
Yeah.
I know you're not so high on Daniel Jones, but
right.
Honestly, they never really had an O-line for him. We have to be hopeful about what they've done in the offseason. And I do believe, you know, the guys like the center, John Michael Smith, I think he's a tough kid. I think, and, you know, Bellinger coming back. He has a chemistry with Jones. They got this rookie from Penn State, also a tight end. And,
yeah.
I mean, for Hodgkins to even make the practice squad, it shows you how deep the receiver room is.
Compared to when he was the number one option. Yes, I agree.
Exactly. I mean, think about when they had, Richie James, David Sills IV, and Kenny Galladay. I mean,
We're
a far cry from that in terms of
absolutely
who's going to catch the ball. And then, you know, I wonder why they couldn't have maybe given Brian Burns like $27 million a year and give a few more to Saquon, because I think that's all it really took for him to sign with the Eagles, you know. And he was just so much of a part of the offense, and the other teams really had a game plan around Saquon more so, I think, they will have to against Singletary.
No doubt. No one's going to – they're going to game plan against the Giants' run game attack, but not really against Saquon Barkley – against Singletary the same way Saquon Barkley. But I think the Giants did the exact right thing. I'm not paying Saquon Barkley now. I think the Giants handled it exactly right. I thought Joe Shane came off. I mean, there's been some mixed reviews. A lot of people think Joe Shane. I've read a couple of stories where they think Joe Shane came off terribly in the Hard Knocks offseason edition. I thought he came off pitch perfect. I'll be honest with you. I thought he handled the Saquon Barkley. Saquon Barkley is an aging running back, unfortunately for him. And the Giants just aren't in a place where the running back, you know, I mean, they haven't won with him. I think they're better off not paying him. He's missed time every single year. He's good for a high ankle sprain every single year. I'm not trying to knock him. He's a great, talented player. And he's probably going to be great with the Eagles, I have no doubt. But if your best player is your running back, you're not very good. Look around the league. Look at the history of the league. Barring Jim Brown, like Deion Sanders, Barry Sanders never won anything. Who's been the best running back of the recent generations? Right, Adrian Peterson. What'd he win? Henry, what have they done? Like, it's just, it's not a position, and unfortunately, he's reading the NFL. And especially where the Giants are, roster-wise, it doesn't make much sense to put that much money into a running back. As he said, you don't pay a quarterback $40 million to hand it off to a $20 million running back. Like, it just, it doesn't make sense. That's why when you draft him, you got to be, that's why I hated the draft pick at the time. One, I don't draft running backs two overall at all, but I certainly don't do it if my roster's a mess. Like, he's the last piece. If you're lucky enough to be really talented and have a great roster and you want to draft a running back, okay. I don't like it then, but at least it makes sense. And I wish Saquon Barkley the best, but it just, I think the Giants did exactly what they should have. You don't pay aging running backs who are hurt all the time. Jim in Madison. What's up, Jim?
Hey, C-Mac. Thanks a lot for taking my call.
You got it, buddy.
So I wanted to put in my two cents about the Daniel Jones thing. I also wanted to ask you a 07 Super Bowl question.
Sure.
So Daniel Jones, you know, I've always been a big supporter of his. You know, but I, obviously at this point, I have to concede that it's now or never. You know, another 500 year and, like, let's give him one more chance is not going to cut it anymore.
Yeah.
But what you were saying about Brian Daboll never getting to work with a quarterback, I don't know if that's exactly fair. You know, when Brian Daboll got here, Daniel Jones was like, what, like 24? You know, he was ready for a fresh start, ready for a new phase. I mean, I think he, you know, that was a chance to coach up, maybe not someone he drafted his pick. But here's a guy, you know, with a lot of ability who you know, should be able to coach up if you're the guru.
And he did. He screamed at him after a terrible interception in the red zone week one against Tennessee, and then he played as good as Daniel Jones can play, or has played, and he's limited the he limited the turnovers. He made a couple plays here and there, and they won some games. But, like, again, it's, I understand what you're saying, but it was year three already.
Yeah.
Because now you have to make decisions on paying people. Like, that's the thing. Like, it's not just, all right, he was given a 24-year-old kid. He gave him a good year, got him a contract, and then what happened? He got hurt, and, like, it's, you've been dealing with the same thing, and now it's at the point where he's making big time money, and it's like, it's just not. I'd rather have, and you saw, and I'm sorry, it was just obvious. Brian Daboll would have done anything to trade up and draft a quarterback. He would have done anything. You watch him. Yeah. You saw his face. Would you trade up for Jaden Daniels? Like, the words barely came out of Joe Shane's mouth before Brian Daboll's like, yes, yeah, I would. Like, I mean, it's just a matter of having that ability, having that time, having that rookie season, having a quarterback, making the rookie contract and being able to spread that money around elsewhere. Like, it's just, that's why he was brought here to do. That's what he did in Buffalo, and I wanted to get him a chance to see him do it here. And unfortunately, like, even, I think the team's going to be all right. Where are they going to be at the draft next year? Like you say, like, even another 500 year isn't enough. I don't disagree with you. Like, if Daniel Jones goes out there and wins 8 games, right, and plays relatively well, doesn't turn the ball over, they win some games, you know, him and Neighbors develop some sort of chemistry, I guess, or it's about as good as you can hope without being super optimistic, without being, wow, Daniel Jones just played great, now we're good with the quarterback position. Anything short of that, 500, he was okay. I agree with you. I don't want to continue on with Daniel Jones, still even at that point. But where? No. What do they do? Now they're in no position to draft a quarterback. What do they do? Go pay another quarterback? Like, what do they do? They stick with Daniel Jones, and we're all still going, well, at least we know he's okay. Like, it's just, I don't know.
I feel, you know, I agree with a lot of that. It's just, to me, it's like, you know, the problem with Daniel Jones, the problem with Brian Daboll, the problem with Joe Shane, the problem with the Giants is what we've been saying is that they have a terrible offensive line year in, year out, and they don't have any weapons. I mean, you know, no one can win under those circumstances. I thought Daniel Jones had a lot of promise as an athlete and a quarterback with a temperament for New York. And if he's too hurt and too shell-shocked by now, I understand and we have to move on. And it will be a wasted opportunity, in my opinion. But just quickly, in terms of the 07 Super Bowl question.
Yeah, sure, real quick.
You know, my buddy Jesse wants to know, what was a better / more important play in that game? Obviously the Tyree catch,
right,
or the 3rd and 11 to Steve Smith when he goes up the sideline? Because obviously Tyree's iconic, but 3rd and 11, that's a tough play too. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, look, it's, I love, They're both obviously important that they probably don't win the game without them, but I mean, the Tyree play, I mean, it depends on what, like, if he never gets out of that sack, then the game is certainly over. At least, you know, like, they would have had 4th and 11. I don't know. It's impossible to say which one's more important. They're both, every play needed to happen. Otherwise, they don't win that game and beat the undefeated Patriots. Like, every one of them needed to happen. So what's more important? All of them. But, I mean, it's hard to go against the Tyree play. I mean, it's more yards. It's a huge play. He gets out of a sack. I mean, you're talking about a loss of yards. You're talking about, I mean, they're all very important. It's hard to say. But I would tell you my favorite play of the championships is still the throw to Manningham. I think you could argue that's the greatest throw in NFL history. I think you can argue that play to Manningham where he's looking right the entire time, just turns left in a heartbeat and throws that ball pitch perfect right into right in the bucket as Manningham is about to step out of bounds. Like, I think that is the greatest throw in NFL history. I don't think you could throw a football better than that. Just the entire play where he's looking the other way, spins quickly, sees Manningham, releases it, and throws. I mean, you could not have placed it better. And my favorite moment, especially now that I've become this Tom Brady hater, my favorite moment of all the championships, too, as much as the first one's special and everything, but the one where it just, like, it gave you that eating of the tears. Like, there is a moment there, if you watch the game, where Tom Brady is watching the replay on the big screen, and he recognizes and sees that both feet are in, and he says to himself, he's like, they're in. Like, he's like, that's a catch. And just the disappointment and the suffering in Tom Brady's eyes for that brief moment can sustain me in the dark moments of my life.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.